This is the second one with Antipat.
And yet more crap singing.
With Zygons and lactating Loch Ness Monsters.
It's a horror of punk rock.
And somehow manages to be even worse than last time.
Not sure I agree with that, actually.
But no Stylophant.
It's called The Zygon Who Fell to...
Here we go.
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering We're in Tarmadark, Dalek, Spacetime, and Glam Rock.
Stylophones are awful, that's the TARDIS way.
We're a punk in a Mary's Kane.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when?
Reviewing all the poo there is.
Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook, even those are gobbledygook.
We'll review them all, you see, so join us on this odyssey. It's Who Back When? Who back when?
Hello and welcome to A012 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm JD and joining me tonight is Bumpkin.
Oh my god, hello me.
Hello you.
Hi.
And today we're doing The Zygon Who Fell to Earth.
Yes, we are. Don't look so glum.
It's not quite as bad as Dead London. And that's the nicest thing I'm saying about it all night.
That's very true.
I won't spoil anything about it that isn't already spoiled by the title.
Okay. Is this a pun of something? Am I being completely dim?
Yeah, it'll be the David Bowie...
I'm an idiot. Anyway, so check it out, people. Just a tiny little disclaimer up front. In case we end up having sped through this audiobook review, here are two reasons. Numero uno, it's really not a great one. Numero dos, we're recording two audiobook reviews back to back tonight.
And one of them's a two-parter.
Yeah, and it also happens to be absolutely fantabulous. So we're both very eager to get on with that, to be honest. But what do you say we jump into the B-scow?
Let us B-scow away. The Doc and Lucy find themselves in the heart of the Lake District in a B&B run by Auntie Pat of Horror of Glam Rock fame.
Turns out Auntie Pat failed to mention to her niece that she'd once been a hotelier, mildly successful, and married to a famous folk star.
Another thing that apparently never popped up in conversation was the fact that said husband isn't human and is in fact a Zygon in disguise.
And a few of his fellow Zygons are just about to check into this B&B as a first step in their plan to take over the world.
The Doc and Lucy ready themselves to save the world, but how do you do that when you don't know who's a human, who's a shape-shifting alien, who's normally covered in slimy suckers?
B-scow over. You're welcome.
Let's get on with this.
Alright, so we start off episode 1 of 1 with two chaps by the names of Mervyn Urquhart and Humphrey Mims. They're somewhere in the Lake District, and they're motoring away towards the B&B that we mentioned, the B-scow.
No, I'm going to stop you there.
Alright, go for it.
Because...
I know what you're
saying. I'm sorry, because you're in a car, but that's not the first thing that happens in this episode.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We are off to a brilliant start here. Yeah, no, you're right. What's the first thing we hear?
The guest star of the episode singing on the radio. As if Paul Mars has not... And by the way, Paul Mars, who wrote this episode, also wrote Horror of Glam Rock, if you hadn't have guessed.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, so the first thing we hear is the guest star of the episode singing on the radio. You are getting Horror of Glam Rock flashbacks already.
He does have a certain... Like, I'm sure you could draw some sort of graph that covers the plot structure of Horror of Glam Rock and then compare it to the equivalent graph of this episode or this audiobook, and you would probably find that they line up pretty well.
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, we start off with some singing. Fantastic. It's beautiful. This song, by the way, the song that we start off listening to, holy shit, I was about to skip this song, and now you've got me talking about it again. All right, so the song that we start off the audiobook with is supposedly a number one hit.
How?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a piece of garbage.
In a way, it is infinitely worse than the one from Horror of Glam Rock. In a way. It doesn't have any stylophone, thank God.
That's true.
But it isn't done by a singer. And, you know, Stephen Gately, who did the song in Horror of Glam Rock...
Yeah, at least has a voice.
At least is a singer.
Yeah.
They're in a car going to the Lake District.
These two, I love these guys. So they are Mervyn Urquhart and Humphrey Mims, allegedly. These are their aliases. In fact, they are, correct me if I'm wrong, second in command, not Urquhart, Urtak? Urtak?
Yeah.
And Commander Mims, or something like that.
And they're heading to this hotel, and honestly, if you just listen to this and ignore the singing, you actually think the episode's off to a good start.
Yeah, no, it seems super funny.
And Mims is played by Tim Brooke Taylor.
Who's that?
Now, Tim Brooke Taylor starred in a comedy in the 70s called The Goodies with Graham Garden. Now, Graham Garden will appear again in the Big Finish audios later on as a very, very, very important character. And he also starred in Max Warp as Jeffrey Vantage.
Oh, really?
Now, and they were both goodies. So Tim Brooke Taylor comes from this stock of sort of comedy.
Yeah.
So you expect him to be good. And to be fair, he's probably the best guest star in this.
Oh, I think his entire character basically carries the show.
Yes. So they get to the hotel and we move over to the hotel where the Doc and Lucy are having one of their random conversations about poetry.
Yeah.
The doctor tried to take Lucy to go and see Wordsworth, but didn't.
Instead,
he ended up
in, yeah, sorry,
1984.
Yeah. This is a little bit weird to me. Can I just say this whole, the way that we find out that it's 1984 is really strange, because they're sitting down, they're out in the B&B, they're having, I guess, like some sort of all day breakfast or whatever. They're mid meal talking about Wordsworth, and all of a sudden Lucy goes, "What year is it, by the way?" And he says, "Oh, it's 1984. But they have had time to enter the B&B, to order food, to say hi to, spoiler alert, Auntie Pat, who runs this B&B, sit down, start eating, converse about Wordsworth, and it hasn't even occurred to her that it may be 1984, or to ask at least what year it is.
No, this is just writing 101 exposition.
Yeah.
And it's completely out of character to Lucy, because Lucy would have turned up, seen Auntie Pat, and gone, "Doctor, what the fuck the year is?"
Yeah.
You know, as she does. She's not going to wait until we're talking about Wordsworth. No. She's not. This is not Lucy. She asks what year it is the moment they step out of the TARDIS.
Yeah. Not in this audiobook, though. Whatever. It's 1984, and she goes, "Well, that is really strange, but what is stranger still is that we keep bumping into Auntie Pat." Because this is now, we said this in the B-Scout, we've already mentioned it in this episode, or in the review, the B&B is run by Auntie Pat. And so they've just arrived here by sheer happenstance?
Well, TARDIS does do that from time to time.
I guess so, yeah.
So they're just chatting, and then we go back to reception, Urquhart and Mims turn up. And
this is a hilarious scene.
And to be honest, I think the small bit of checking in that we get here purely deserves a soundbite, because the actual interplay between Mims and Pat, just for the few seconds where they're talking at the start, really does deserve it.
Okay, soundbite?
Soundbite.
Soundbite.
"We would like a twin or a double, it matters not. We would prefer a twin-bedded room. Really, a double room would be acceptable also."
And that was the single good bit of the episode. So if you've now listened to all of what we wanted to listen to of this episode.
Mims is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mims is totally smitten with Urquhart, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Massively
smitten. Although they don't have emotions, as we find out later. Except
he does have emotions. He even says that he thinks he's, spoiler alert, he thinks that he's experienced one of these elusive human emotions, i.e. love.
And this is exactly what it's referring to. They're not meant to have emotions.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're referring to the fact that Mims is obviously in love with Urquhart.
Yeah, but not just that. He's kind of treating it like they are totally going to get it on. This is not so much a business trip as it is sort of a love getaway. I think later on, spoiler alert, holy shit, people, really sorry about this. So, jumping back and forth, but a little bit later on when he goes like, maybe we should just crawl into bed or something like that, he tells Urquhart, and Urquhart goes, no, we're going to go for a moonlit stroll.
I know.
Yeah.
You know,
this is a romantic getaway for them, from Mim's point of view.
So they talk about Pat's necklace, and they're quite interested in it. They say that they know Pat's husband.
Yeah.
Pat's husband turns up. They have a conversation, and these people used to work for the record company. Trevor, Pat's husband.
Yeah, he's this folk singer who was a number one, like a fantastically successful folk singer. And his song is the song that is currently being remixed and that we open the episode on.
Trevor doesn't like them. And as Pat takes them away to their love shack.
But we get already from the start, right, that he knows exactly who they are and what they are.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
When they're in the car, holy shit. This is the most chaotic opening to an audiobook review we've had so far, but I think that's down to the writing of this episode being absolute shit.
It's the most chaotic audiobook.
It really is, yeah. Audiobook, not episode. But when they're in the car in the very beginning, do they also refer to Trevor as whatever his Zygon name is?
No, that's later on.
Oh, that's later on? Okay. Sorry, people. All right, fine.
And then we get, and this is back to writing 101 exposition, Pat has taken them away to their room.
Yeah.
And if this was on television, Trevor would turn to the camera and go, "You will never take me back, not without a fight."
Yeah, exactly.
It's lazy, lazy writing.
Yeah.
It's also lazy, lazy, lazy accent. Trevor's accent is abysmal. I'm not sure where it's from.
Yeah,
I can't really
pass judgment on that at all. To me, that sounded fantastically, well, authentic, to be honest.
I'm not sure whether it's Yorkshire or Somerset, but what is irritating beyond all belief is that he doesn't actually sound at all like his normal voice, which would have been probably much better for the episode,
okay,
considering he's played by Stephen Pacey.
Who's that?
He played a character called Del Tarrant in Blake 7, the second main character in seasons 3 and 4 of Blake 7.
Oh, holy crap, that's him?
That's Stephen Pacey.
Oh, that is awesome. Oh, Blake 7. Okay, anyway, yeah, back to the audiobook. Can we just take a tiny little moment to comment on the name of the B&B?
Oh, no, why should we?
We have to. The name of the B&B is living memory. Yeah, it's Bygone's Guest House.
Rather than Zygon's guest house. It's lazy writing.
Jesus balls. Let Zygons be Zygons, guys. All right.
And that pun was better than anything you'll find in this episode.
Thank you very much. That's really kind.
It's a low baseline.
We then go back to the doc. The doc is super impressed by the whole place. He's a little bit flabbergasted or flummoxed that Auntie Pat is this successful, because as far as we know from Horror of Glam Rock, Auntie Pat, like, basically grew up to be kind of a nothing. Like, she never accomplished anything in her life. In fact, I think Lucy says that straight out in Horror of Glam Rock. Like, oh, she never got married, she never had any kids, she never did anything. But here she is, runs a successful B&B, is married to some rock star or folk singer or whatever. And when she then turns up at the table and kind of goes, oh, this is really weird, you guys are like jumping back and forth in time, you haven't even been born yet, Lucy.
Well, before Lucy goes into her spiel of terror, which is almost a copy and paste from what she does in Glam Rock.
Yes, exactly.
There's actually an anti-Pat line which I really like, which is with the Burr Monsters and the Tomorrow Twins and the worst night of my life.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, it's not quite the worst night of our lives. That was Dead London. But I actually quite like that line from Pat.
Okay.
But then, as you're saying, Lucy just says, oh, I didn't know you were going to be happy and successful because you weren't in the future.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what she does in Glam Rock.
Yeah, I know. No one would do this. I mean, I know Lucy is kind of a slightly distraught person. Like, she doesn't really have her shit together. But she's certainly more diplomatic than to look her auntie in the eye and go, but you're meant to be miserable. Like, why didn't you tell me that you were happy at one point?
She did it in Glam Rock, which was obviously incredibly early in her time-traveling career.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never met Auntie Pat before, and it was a complete slip of the tongue in Glam Rock.
Yeah.
It really was. This is just like Lucy is being thick.
So who wrote this again? Paul something?
Paul Mars. The same person who wrote Glam Rock.
Here's what I reckon happened. So Paul Mars, he's sitting at home eating like a bucket of KFC, and his phone rings and they go like, listen, something happened. The dude who wrote like this fantastic script for the next audiobook, unfortunately his cat peed on his MacBook and he lost the script. So we need you to pen something in the next 15 minutes. Go for it, Paul. And Paul takes this to mean they thought Glam Rock was the shit. They think I'm the best writer there is. I'm just going to copy exactly what I did before because that really worked. And thus, we have this rubbish.
Yeah, that's just as believable.
It's way too long, whatever.
No, that's absolutely, utterly believable. No, it really is.
Okay,
so
anyway.
Lucy decides to say, you know, okay, right, change the subject. When can we meet Trev?
Yeah.
And now we get the backstory of Trevor, and it's pointless. Lucy then turns around and goes, well, why did you never say? And then, unfortunately...
Yeah, that's where we get the, Auntie Pat, this isn't going to last because you are destined to be miserable.
Yeah.
And lonely.
So,
and unsuccessful.
Antipat goes away.
And let's face it, probably barren. Anyway, so, yeah. Okay, so then we get back to Mims and Urquhart, right?
Oh, we have the Doc and Lucy hiding behind the curtain a la...
Yes. Yes. Okay, so mirrors and red cards, they turn up somewhere off screen, so to speak, like out of frame, and Doc all of a sudden goes, wait, shh, Lucy, check this out. We got to spy on these other guests because maybe they're up to no good. This is ham-fisted into the fucking audiobook like nothing ever has been before.
No.
There's no reason to suspect them of anything. They've done absolutely nothing. They're just two guys who've just checked into a B&B. There is nothing odd about them, but he treats it as though they're not in disguise. Spoiler alert, they're Zygons. He treats them as though they are actually there, like radiating alien energy, which they're not.
Which they're not.
Later on, fucking Lucy is going to say something about, like, oh, they seem to be up to no good. Like, this is in just a minute when she goes off to follow them. And he goes, oh, you shouldn't always believe the worst of people. Like, maybe they're just normal people, but fine, go and follow them if you need to.
Yeah, so they're hiding behind a curtain.
Oh, this audiobook pisses me off.
They're hiding behind the curtain.
Okay.
They're totally, you know, Terry Nationing the entire thing.
Yeah. They're Vord hiding.
They're Vord hiding. And they are being literally the Watcher from the Time Meddler by listening in to a conversation. For no apparent reason, Lucy decides to Nancy Drew, who she doesn't know who it is, after them.
Yeah.
So anyway, cut to Lucy meddling monking.
Yeah.
By the lake, right? She's just there. She is where they have just turned up. She's not followed them. She's there
as
they turn up for no apparent reason.
This audiobook is as bad as the next is good.
So they're joined by a third person.
Yeah, who is a third Zygon, right?
Yeah.
Who is not in disguise.
Called Gracchus, who's not in disguise. Yeah. And thank fuck for small mercies.
Yeah, and this is a chick Zygon.
Yeah, it's female, therefore by process of elimination is played by Katarina Olsen.
Boom. Nice. Oh, finally.
Well, by now, she's got Paul Mars hostage in her bondage recording cupboard.
Oh my god, if there's space in there.
Give me a part. Give me a part in it.
Oh, I'm so adding that to my bucket list. Katarina, if you have a bondage cupboard that somehow enables you to not only do what everyone does in a bondage cupboard, but also gain access to roles in Doctor Who audiobooks, please grant me entry. I want to be in your bondage cupboard. Okay, yeah.
Anyway, then we get more. I'm really glad this is coming out after the Time Meddler. I really am. Mm-hmm. Because Lucy does another Time Meddler thing.
Oh, okay.
Because there is no one around apart from the aliens and her. And yet she out loud says, Auntie Pat's gonna go mad when she discovers all the monsters here. Out loud.
Yeah. Wait, hang on. Dude. You skipped something pretty massive, like literally and figuratively massive, because the reason she says this is that there is a, what's it called? A Scarrison?
Oh, no, the Scarrison comes next. She does her time meddling first. And then...
No, because she's... okay, yeah, sorry, but she's not discovered by the Zygons until after the Scarrison...
No. She does her thoughts out loud.
Okay, yeah. Scarrison pops up.
Which is just disgusting.
Wait, hang on. Wait, let's first describe what we're going to soundbite, because we have to soundbite this. Scarrison pops up. The Scarrison basically is like a Loch Ness monster, right? This is from one of the episodes, a Tom Baker episode.
And to be fair, I'm not doing my normal duty of explaining how this fits into the larger world of Doctor Who, mainly because it's a shit audiobook.
But this is a Tom Baker episode, right?
The Zygon that fell to Earth is a pretty much almost direct...
It's a wannabe.
It's a wannabe version of Terror of the Zygons.
Bingo.
Which is set in Loch Ness, and it's actually very good.
Which doctor?
Tom.
Tom Baker. Okay, good. All right. I totally, because I didn't know if my brain was making this up, but I totally remember seeing that.
It's very good. Okay. But this is a takeoff of it, and it's abysmal. Anyway, the Loch Ness monster turns up.
Yeah.
And Zygons need the
milk
of the Scarrison in order to live. And Mims and Urtak have been having powdered milk substitute.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, Mims, and what we then hear is basically Mims giving the Scarrison the sloppiest BJ that's ever featured in Doctor Who.
No, second sloppiest.
Oh, really? What's the sloppiest?
Yes.
Are Tom Baker actually going down on that alien?
On Irato, yes.
Okay, so wait, hang on. Shall we have a soundbite of that?
No.
Yes, let's have a soundbite of the sloppy BJ.
I'm sorry, listeners.
No, you're welcome, people.
Soundbite.
Sloppy BJ soundbite.
Oh, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
Here, come on, Alerta. Your share of milk.
This is quite revolting.
Oh, yum.
Then she steps on a twig and thankfully is kidnapped because I couldn't stand any more of this.
Yeah, so Kablamatron, cut back to the B&B. Lucy arrives in their room and... wait, hang on. Is she in... No, she's in the bar.
No, she's in the bar.
She's in the bar, right, yeah, because she's about to down a fucking pint of vodka.
Yeah, and obvious Zygon Lucy is obvious.
Yeah.
Because it's not Lucy.
So, can you explain this? In original, like, Tom Baker Zygon times, did they drink alcohol or something?
I think this is just Lucy being...
Lucy.
Just Lucy.
I was trying to remember, like, was there any kind of alcohol reference when the Zygons turned up very close to the 50th anniversary? Well, the 50th anniversary, but no, I don't
know. No, this is just something that Paul Miles pulled out of somewhere.
Yeah, I don't want to ask where. By the way, not the only alcohol, like, massive, excessive alcohol consumption scene in this audiobook.
No, we have brandy later on.
Yeah, she downs some brandy. Okay, anyway, yeah, so she's being really weird. She tells Doc, okay, that man, Trevor, told me that I would find you here, which she would never say. She also says that the two guys that she followed were, turned out to be regular businessmen. But she says something about, like, the doctor having to see something in the basement.
Oh, yeah, this entire scene is just, like, pointless. But they go down to the basement,
yeah,
and they go to the body printing machine,
yeah,
which has original Trevor in.
Yeah, so now Doc knows that Trevor's a Zygon, and they have to tell Auntie Pat, but he tells Lucy, like, try to be diplomatic, because so far in this audiobook, you have managed very well to be the perfect diplomat.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, next morning, cut to Auntie Pat, Doc, and Lucy having breakfast. Basically, Lucy turns around and goes, yeah, you know, you're... Trevor, well, he's an alien.
Yeah.
The anti-pack goes, yeah, I know that.
Yeah. It turns out she's got a thing for, like, massive aliens that are covered in suckers. I totally get it, by the way.
And then Anti-Pat does just completely call out the Doctor and Lucy on their complete hypocritical nature.
Oh my god, the hypocrisy is insane.
By going, hold on, you two are prejudiced against aliens.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Well, they're both being totally racist. I mean, the Doctor even says, all Zygons are the same. They are all bad. Essentially, like, the only good Zygon is a dead Zygon.
Yeah, pretty much. And then basically, Pat calls Trevor in. They admit that they love each other. She knows he's a Zygon. Trevor turns into a Zygon.
Yep.
And Auntie Pat gives him a great big hug and says, he's my great big hunk of Zygon. They're all suckers everywhere.
Yeah.
Lucy's just had enough of this and wanders off. The Doctor, for some strange reason, apologises for Lucy's behaviour, but he's being just a shit. And then they go about, Pat and Trevor go about their day. Do you know what? The scene just felt like it was exposition to move us to the next scene.
Yeah.
All the scenes in the story feel like they're exposition to move us to the next scene.
Pretty much. Anyway, alright, so cut to Ertak and Mims. They have a ship somewhere, or there is a ship somewhere. Turns out, by the way, this is Trevor's old ship, right? Is this Trevor's old ship? Actually, you know what?
Their old ship.
Did they all arrive in the same ship? Trevor?
Yeah, it feels like they all arrived in the same ship.
Okay, no, this actually makes perfect sense. So the Scarrison is back in the ship, or close to the ship, wherever. We now learn, we didn't really emphasize this earlier on, but the weird bracelet, whatever piece of jewelry that Auntie Pal has, it is of some significance. So now Mims receives the order, go and get it, because it's some sort of Zygon thing in the bob. Yeah.
And so we cut to the song again.
No, because Lucy enters first. Lucy turns up in the room, says, oh, by the way, check this out. Everything is really weird because Auntie Pat knows that her husband is a Zygon. Lucy is now, we know, like, she is officially a Zygon. She is officially Gracchus, the chick Zygon. And she goes, Auntie Pat
on the grounds that I completely forgot it.
Yeah, but like, there is literally only one thing that makes this worth mentioning, and that is, she says, not only is Auntie Pat in love with her Zygon husband, not Trevor, but Trevor, or not Trevor, appears to be in love with Auntie Pat. And this is now sort of the introduction of sub-theme, what is the meaning of love? And we are actually going to get the answer to that question later on in the audiobook.
Spoilers. No, we don't.
No, we do.
No, we don't.
It's bullshit, but someone actually gives... Auntie Pat gives us the answer, what is love?
No, what she actually says is a bollocks made up little piece of crap, like most of this audiobook.
Okay, fine. Right.
In my opinion.
Yeah, you know what? Be that way.
We now return to the song.
Okay.
And
Pat is listening to it.
It's got to number 4 in the chart.
Ugh.
How? I don't know.
You know what? I want to know what number 5 is. No, I want to know what are numbers 1, 2, and 3.
I don't know. Everything I do it for you, but probably, you know.
It's been one forever. Okay.
Well, you know, to be fair, you know, this is 1984. There were some really good songs in the charts in 1984.
There are only 3 good songs, apparently.
Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Relax.
Yeah, that's one.
Probably not at the same time, but Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Two Tribes.
Okay, that's 2.
I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder.
That's 3. Falling Star, played by Trevor the Zygon. That's 4. Number 5, what's on number 5 on the hit list?
Ray Parker Jr.'s Ghostbusters.
There you go.
Oh,
that's clear.
And Black Lace, Agadoo.
Jesus Christ, I just got an inward boner. All right, let's get on with the show. Patty is in the kitchen, she's listening to the remix, when all of a sudden Mims pops up, at first being very pleasant, like the kind of pleasant Mims he was in the car in the beginning, talking about nature being beautiful and whatnot. Now he's in the kitchen talking about how the music is like, oh, you know what, it's making us rich, and we're just getting so many royalties, it's so nice. And then he talks about her necklace and says, oh, that's very unusual. It's very, do you mind if I take a closer look at it? We get another little bit of exposition. Where did she get this from? Yes, her husband Trevor gave it to her, blah, 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 blah. Who gives a damn? And then all of a sudden, Kablamatron, Mims, tries to take it from her. But it turns out it is fused to Auntie Pat. It is stuck to her flesh.
Yeah, and then he takes Auntie Pat away.
Yeah, there's like this weird shift in tonality, because at first he's like, oh, let me just have a look at this. He's very, very kind. And when it turns out it's stuck to her, instead of going, oh, I'm really sorry, he just goes, oh, fuck you, human female, and tries to pull it off her, but then ends up kidnapping all of her.
I hate this episode. So, Trevor,
yeah,
and Lucy have a pint of brandy. Well, actually, to be fair, Lucy has a pint of brandy. Trevor doesn't.
Yeah, this is alcohol excess part 2.
And then we get exposition part 3 by saying, right, necklace is a Zygon device, probably runs the ship.
Does it run the ship? It runs some sort of weapon aboard the ship. And, like the missiles. And because he figured, oh no, he's now a good guy, he took it out. It's basically like the launch key.
Trevor wanted to leave, but he couldn't leave the Loch Ness Monster. And then we get some shit about maybe the Zygons just want money so they could fix up their ship, which makes no sense.
Yeah, why would you need money for that? No, seriously, why would you are they going to employ human engineers to fix their Zygon spaceship? No, they don't need money for it.
Makes no sense whatsoever. So we'll cut back to Mims and Ertak. Mims being the only good thing in this episode.
Oh, we do learn one thing. There's a tunnel. Like, we learn where the Zygon ship is, and it's, like, in a nearby town. Grasmir, by the way. I've been to Grasmir. Nice place.
I thought they were in Grasmir and the ship was in Ullswater.
Oh,
or the other way around.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you're right. Oh, cool.
I can't remember where they are. I can't remember where they are.
Actually, it genuinely doesn't matter. But what we learn is he got the Scarison, the not Loch Ness Monster, to essentially eat a tunnel between the two locations. So now they're going to go there, right?
Yeah.
They're going to take the tunnel to go there.
Yeah, so we go back to Mims and Ertak, because this is just really poor.
Now we get the love exposition. We get the love monologue.
This is fine, right?
No, it is not fine, JD.
This is fine.
How
this
is this fine. Fine? All of a sudden this turns into some sort of weird hippie romance bullshit.
No, that's not the thing that's fine. The thing that's fine is that Mims's lines here are actually well delivered.
Okay, yeah, fair.
We get Pat telling Mims and Ertak that love is the most important thing in the world. Ertak saying, you know, this is all shit. It's some sort of scam invented by the record companies.
Yeah.
That Trevor can't love Pat. She just goes, yeah, you're all shit.
Yeah. This is a lovely summary of what happens here.
Mims turns around and goes, you know, do you think a Zygon could ever be in love while giving Google eyes at Ertak?
Yeah.
Ertak says no.
Mims, however, fucking straight up goes, you know what? I think I'm experiencing these feelings.
Is this emotion you Earthlings call love? Anyway.
Okay.
10 years, maybe the ship's fixed itself.
All right, cool. Yeah, cut to the chase. All right, fine. Okay, yeah, let's just leave it hanging there.
Doc and Fake Lucy and Trev.
And Trev.
Go to...
They're in the tunnel. All of a sudden, Kablamatron, the Scarrison, arrives. Or does it? I think it does.
Yes.
And they try to run away. Trevor turns back... sorry, I'm just going to speed through this one. Trevor turns back into a Zygon, like he turns off his whatever disguise thingy, because that way he can communicate with Scarrison and get it to, well, subside its attack and just leave. But he's not quick enough, and instead the Scarrison manages to tail whip Lucy so that she flies and, like, hits her head against the back, like, the back of her head against the tunnel wall. And the Doc, who very clearly knows that she is not the real Lucy, in this scene displays an incredible amount of concern for her.
Even though less than what must be about 20 minutes ago now, all Zygons are evil.
Exactly. So he knows that she is a Zygon. He knows that she is not herself, that she is an alien enemy, but he is, like, genuinely concerned. He goes up to, like, are you okay? And please take it easy, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, then the Scarrison comes back and, I guess, starts chasing them down. Cut to Mims and Urquhart or Ertak or whatever. They now realize that the guys are nearby. What happens then?
Well, Mims turns up and says, come, Trevor, it's time for you to come back to the ship and take your rightful place as Hogoth.
Okay.
So anyway, cut to Ertak and Antipat.
Okay.
Antipat complains about the ship because it's too ugly.
Yeah. The whole thing is organic, right? Like, it's an organic,
it's an organic
spaceship.
Ship.
This is just to clarify to the ladies and gentlemen of podcast land who have not turned off this podcast yet. This is why JD a moment ago said 10 years have passed, the ship has probably healed itself. So does this mean, JD, that they crashed 10 years ago?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even get that.
Or landed, or broke down, or something.
Okay.
It was in 1974, and frankly, we don't get an explanation.
Okay, so it's just me then. All right, fine, go for it.
Oh, no, it's not just you. Anyway, Pat's whinging. Ertak says, no, you can't see Trev. So Trev and Doc basically get thrown into the cell.
Okay, wow. Somehow this escaped me.
The Doc now turns around and goes, right, what have you done with the real Lucy Miller? Because...
Oh, yeah, you know, because you haven't been acting like yourself since you got back from stalking the two B&B guests. And she goes, what are you talking about? Whatever, blah, blah. But then she finally relinquishes her disguise. Turns out, yeah, bada bing, bada boom, she's actually Gracchus. We know that already. No one cares.
She's not well, but she needs some healing slime, which is irrelevant to the plot.
Gross as shit as well. Yeah, and the Doctor, either now or possibly short, like a brief moment ago, says that he has encountered Zygons before and beaten them before.
In Scotland.
In Scotland, i.e. Tom Baker, whatnot.
Yeah. The Doc starts sonicking.
Yeah, because Gracchus leaves. We should say that. Gracchus leaves the cell. It's now only Doctor and Trevor in the cell.
And then we get a story about the real Trevor, because at this point, Trev does have real Trev in a body print machine in the basement.
Yeah, exactly. But there must be some sort of excuse for this.
Hogoth says he's dead, but he's in cryostasis in the body print machine.
Yeah, Hogoth, in case we didn't mention that, that's Trevor's real name.
Yeah. Trev isn't actually using Trevor's body as a sort of like an alive thing.
No. The guy had like a bicycle. He had a motorbike accident, fell into a coma or whatever, was put in cryogenic suspension and Kablamatron. Now he's frozen. Technically, I guess. Is he alive? Like, technically? Well, no, he's not.
Well, no, he's cryogenic, frozen.
Bingo, you know, okay.
At that sort of point of death. Anyway, we get the exposition of what's going on in the episode.
Oh, this is so dumb. This is so dumb. Ladies and gentlemen, if you thought that anything that we've mentioned so far in the story even just tangentially touched upon idiocy, wait until you hear this. What's their plan? What are they doing?
They intend to change the Earth to suit their needs.
Yeah, how?
Via a combination of crap.
Yeah.
Number one, global warming.
Yeah. Well, it's all global warming.
Well, it's all global warming.
Yeah, so, but how do they bring warming?
They could bring about global warming by investing in a load of different industries. The first one, they have modified CFCs, the chlorofluorocarbons in fridges and stuff like that.
Yeah. And number two, that's all fine, but number two is crazy.
Two is the ridiculous one.
Yeah, this is like bad shit out of this world.
They've marketed compact discs and got everyone to move away from records to compact discs because when they're played, the compact discs emit a gas which is increasing the holes in the ozone layer.
Oh, this is crazy dumb. I mean,
and
this is
by the way,
crazy dumb.
They've also got bioweapons on the ship.
Yeah.
So
why would you even fucking ham-fist this stupid compact disc subplot into this audiobook when you've also written in fucking biochemical torpedoes or whatever they are, missiles, into the fucking spaceship? This is so dumb. Oh, poor Mars.
So, Lucy, real Lucy, arrives.
We think.
Yeah, I've given up at this point.
Yeah. Real Lucy, quote
real
unquote,
Lucy.
Spoiler alert, it's still the fucking fake.
Yeah, so real Lucy comes to talk to Auntie Pat. They have a heart-to-heart, and by heart-to-heart, I mean they have exposition.
Yeah.
And basically rips Pat's throat open and gets a necklace.
Yeah.
I've skipped half of that because, frankly, it's not relevant.
Well, no, let's take a moment just to mention one thing here. So it's fake Lucy. She talks to Auntie Pat. Auntie Pat goes, oh, don't worry about it. Like, I would do anything for you, but unfortunately, I can't even take this thing off my, off my neck if I wanted to because it's fused to me. At which point we learn fake Lucy is actually fake Lucy, spoiler alert. And she doesn't just rip it off her body. She fucking kills Pat in the process. Okay. Pat is still alive, but she is about to die, spoiler alert. She tears her throat open. This is the only dramatic thing in the entire episode, basically. The fact that Auntie Pat is going to die, spoiler alert.
Yeah, it is a slightly dramatic moment ruined by the rest of the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so fine. Cut to Doc and Trevor. They now hear an alarm going off, like a tannoy whatever thingy.
Well, we get a slightly more ridiculous point at this point.
Okay, sorry.
Where the doctor basically is telling Trevor that you're a moron. Why did you give that item to Pat?
Yeah, you know what? Fair enough.
And then Trev says, once the gift is given, it can't be taken back. Well, that makes no sense because, you know, who gave it to Trevor, right? And if someone gave it to Trevor, why should...
Oh my God, this didn't even dawn on me.
How could he give it to someone else?
God, that didn't even dawn on me.
It's just stupid. It's stupid.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. He would have, like, it would have been fused to him if he had held on to it.
Holy yeah, it's
shit.
Like,
I did not realize
it's like,
that. That
it's
is
like
so true.
It's like the key of the Lex in the TV series Lex.
Okay.
It can only be passed on when someone dies. So that's it.
Oh man, that's fantastic. Thank you. I now have an increased appreciation of the shitness of this audiobook. All right, anyway, boom, Tannoy.
We're starting the destruction of the planet Earth. Let's move on.
There's a Tannoy announcement that basically goes, we've started off, we're now in phase 5, let's just begin arming the warheads, the biochemical warheads that reduce the rest of our plot to destroy mankind and this atmosphere to something that is entirely nonsensical and superfluous.
Yeah, but there's a second bit of entirely nonsensical and superfluous item that happens here.
Okay, what's that?
Mims, Ertak, and Grasker all in the same room. Why are they doing a Tannoy announcement?
Oh, because there are more Zygons aboard. There must be more Zygons aboard.
Are there?
Well, like, the whole... We never see them. We never meet them.
About them.
No, we do. The announcement itself is like, he tells his crew to go and arm the warheads. That's the actual announcement.
Where have they been for 10 years?
Aboard the ship? No, it's shit. Like, it's an announcement that was probably penned... Like, it's a remnant of a previous draft of this audiobook script. And poor Miles just forgot to fix that, or maybe it's like... The explanation for all this, I'm sure, is written on a post-it note that's stuck to the bottom of the fridge in Paul Mars's house. I unmistakably. Anyway, so because of this announcement, Trev now knows they've taken the necklace off of Patty, which means that Patty is probably going to die, right?
Yes.
So now they race off to find her.
So basically, they go off. We've got the warheads getting ready to launch. We've got Pat dying on the floor. She's saying, help me, Lucy, help me. But, you know, Lucy, unfortunately, is Grask.
Yeah.
And isn't Lucy.
Yeah.
And then we find out that the ship is overstimulated.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly?
It means that Paul Mars can't ripe a toffee.
No, but seriously, okay, what is his intention by saying that? I don't really understand that. The ship is overstimulated. I get that it's organic, but like, I'm assuming there's some sort of like massive electronic nipple on this ship and someone has just been tweaking it too long. There is something that makes no sense here.
Yes, the plot.
Okay, fine. All right. Okay. Yeah. Let's just race through this.
Honestly, there is just one thing after another of things where it's just poor because there's so many logical inconsistencies.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is that Gracchus turns around as a big know-it-all and says, right, only Hagar knows the correct, you know, matter-antimatter ratio, whatever.
Engorgement ratios, please. This is another hint at my nipple theory. There's clearly, like, something either nipple or maybe sort of phallus-related going on here. That's got to be it. Like, the correct engorgement ratios. This is the same audiobook, mind you, with a sloppy BJ in the beginning. There is clearly, like, in order to turn on the weapon of mass destruction, you have to literally turn it on. Like, you have to start, like, jerking off the joystick or something. But you have to get it to exactly the right level of... Yeah. I don't even know what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying, right? I mean, you need to get it to a certain... Oh, fuck it. Let's just move on. All right. So, anyway.
Trevor arrives.
Yeah. Trevor finds...
Trevor arrives, and then Pat's dying. So, Trevor tries to save her. Doesn't work. Pat says, was Lucy ever Lucy? Was she always some sort of sucking monster?
Yeah.
The doctor says, you know, Lucy is a real person. She really, you know, she does love you. I'll get everyone out of here. And Pat turns around and goes, yeah, I can see you fine. All the death, all the disaster around you.
Yeah. And then she dies.
Bye-bye.
That's a damn shame.
It is, actually.
Yeah, I quite liked her character.
So... basically, you've now got Ertak trying to convince Trev that they should blow up the planet.
Yep.
You can have as many women as you want. You don't just have to have Pat. Oh, you can have this one. Look at Lucy.
Yeah. So Trev is now basically playing along. He pretends to be on their side.
So here's where the wheels on the bus come unstuck.
Okay. Explain.
The doc says, right, let's remove the warhead. Trev says, but the key will stick to me and I'll just become like a trigger.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Plot. Yeah. No, it makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. Gracchus should actually be dead now. Having gripped the thing and ripped it off of Pat, Gracchus should now have the thing stuck to her. And in order to pop that, whatever it is, the little missile key into the missile, she would have to give up her life.
So,
doesn't matter.
Then basically what happens next is Hagar basically just, Trev goes into Hagar mode, tells everyone to shut up, tells the doctor to go and get Lucy Miller.
And leave.
And go. And
the other dudes, they're totally fine with this. Mims and Ertak and Gracchus, they're totally fine with it because now Trevor, aka whatever his name is, Hagoth, he's pretending to be on their side and basically just, and even says like, oh, I just want them to go out so that we can then send the Scarrison after them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's what Trevor does.
Yeah.
He sends the Scarrison after something.
Yeah, but not Doc and Lucy.
He sends it after the ship.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, Doc goes, gets Lucy out of the body print machine. Turns out, actually, this is a good point, because she's been out of it this entire time. She has no idea what's been happening, because she's just been sitting in this, like, Zygon tanning bed up until this point. Has no idea that Trevor's an alien, has no idea about anything. Starts referring to Auntie Pat. Like, oh my god, does Pat know that, like, does Auntie Pat know that her husband is an alien? She's going to be so distraught when she finds out. And, well, they just start running off. Kablamatron, Scarrison is now destroying the Zygon ship, like, properly ripping it to pieces.
Then they start tail-whipping Trevor.
Yep, because it turns out they can do that.
We go back to the Doc and Lucy because that's more interesting.
Yeah. Well, basically, they've now Shawshanked out of there. They've taken the tunnel, they're safe, the Zygon ship is destroyed, everyone aboard, presumably, is dead, right?
Kablamatron, back to the guest house.
Okay.
Because Lucy and the Doc are having tea.
Yep. And, oh, by the way, I don't know if this is ever mentioned on the show, but holy crap, the Doctor, he enjoys his sugar. He has six spoonfuls of sugar with his tea.
No, never mentioned in the show.
Okay.
Real Trev is dead, crumbled to dust. Lucy says, oh, I'm sorry, Zygo Trev was really nice.
Yeah.
Basically, they have a conversation that she knows Antipat is around in when she leaves in 2007.
Yep.
So Antipat can't be dead. The Doc says, no, Antipat's dead, move on with your life.
Yep.
Lucy starts crying and then says, right, I'm going off to bed. I've had enough. And,
yeah, well, she says something else as well. She says, let's stick around until tomorrow. Let's not leave right away. Let's stay the night just in case Antipat did survive and comes back tomorrow. Cut to the final scene.
The thing is that had they have left now,
yeah,
then bad things would have happened. And I'll come on to that in my review.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Oh, I'm very curious now. All right. So anyway, cut to the finale of the audiobook. The Doctor goes out on the terrace, sipping his tea. He's quoting, I'm guessing this is Wordsworth. Am I just assuming?
Yeah. I'm assuming it's Wordsworth as well.
I don't know. But I'm assuming that just so that it sort of bookends the audiobook in a way. And then he says, you can come out now. Turns out Kablamatron, Trevor, Zygon Trevor survived. He's badly injured and pops out, goes, you know what? Everyone else died, but it turns out I have the ability to take on human form without the shape-shifting tanning salon bed, whatever, which to me makes no sense. Like, what? Why would you even introduce the tanning bed if you can just do this on your own? But okay, fine. So he now assumes the form of Auntie Pat, so that Auntie Pat, quote-unquote, can live on, which means that the Auntie Pat that Lucy grew up with is, in fact, Trevor.
And then the Doctor does something which he will very, very soon regret.
Oh.
He says, yeah, I'm not going to tell Lucy.
Ah.
And then the Doctor and Auntie Pat Trev go away.
Yeah.
And we end the episode with more fucking singing.
Yep. Oh, terrible.
Reviews!
Reviews.
Reviews.
I'll go first.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
It is a complete waste of an episode. It's a brilliant idea. It is really, really good in parts. And by those parts, I mean the first 5 seconds and, you know, Mims. Tim Brooke Taylor and Catriona Olsen and Auntie Pat do good work. Yeah. Stephen Pacey is wasted.
Remind me, who was Stephen Pacey again?
Trev,
okay.
Right, Del Tarrant from Blake 7.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, playing Trev.
This probably should have been a two-parter and written by someone else.
Paul Mott, in case you're listening. Hi.
If you've listened to our review of Rose, of Rose, you know how I kept apologizing for you and your hatred of Mickey Smith, Noel Clarke.
Yeah, not Noel Clarke. I don't hate Noel Clarke because I don't know the guy. I'm sure he's a spiffy fellow.
And I'm not going to do it for Paul Mars in this episode because this is just abysmal. My score, which I will give you in a minute, I have increased and by half a point over what I think this episode is.
Okay.
Because I have added in that extra half a point because of something which happens in the episode.
Okay.
If this episode had not been written, its sequel would not have been written.
Yeah.
And its sequel is probably the second best episode of the Eighth Doctor Adventures.
Okay.
So I know that this is going to lead into the second best episode that they have produced. So I have given it a score which is 0.5 higher than my thoughts on this episode.
Okay. What is your score?
1.1.
Oh. Okay, yeah, fair. No, that's good. That's good.
If you have listened to this, and I am conscious that this audio review is not brilliant, and the reason I'm saying that is because this episode isn't even bad in the way that Dead London and Phobos are bad.
Yeah.
Where you can make fun of it. This episode just makes you want to get to the end of it.
It does, yeah.
So that's the end of my review. 1.1 out of 10, and it's 0.5 higher because it leads into Death in Blackpool.
Okay. So when we recorded the intro to this podcast episode, I say something like, oh, I'm not sure I agree with you on whether this is actually worse than Horror of Glamrock. I have come to the conclusion that it definitely is, over the past hour or so of recording. Here's the thing. This audiobook is actually surprisingly re-listenable. I speak from experience because I have listened to this audiobook 4 times in the past 2 days, and I hate myself for doing so. But the reason that it is re-listenable is, I would say, threefold. Now, I'm not entirely sure I agree that Trev is entirely wasted. I think Trev is a great character. I think he's very likable and just good fun. The main reason this is re-listenable is Mims. Mims is fantastic. He's such fun. From the very beginning when the... I'm sorry, this is maybe a weird way to go about reviewing this, but Mims is such great fun, especially in... like, from the very get-go, from the very beginning, they're sitting in the car and he's sort of chewing on his own first name, or the first name of his alibi. He's like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever get used to this name. Humphrey, Humphrey, Humphrey. Like, he's just... he's such a freaking charming guy. I really like him. I love the fact that he's smitten with Ertok. Ertok, meanwhile, is total douchebag. God, I hate that guy. Anyway, Mims wins. The third reason is the actual drama and the playing with time. Now, I haven't listened to part 3 of this trilogy of episodes, but the fact that we've already come to know Antipat in Horror of Glamrock, Terror of Glamrock, whatever it was called, who gives a crap? The fact that we got to know her, and we know that she had a certain life, and she was there when Lucy grew up. The fact that we have that entire theory, that entire backstory, turned on its head to now find out that that wasn't Antipat, that was fucking Trevor. That is tremendously bodacious. And that makes this marginally interesting. However, it's not a plot that has a few holes. It's a massive gaping crevasse that has a tiny little fleck of plot inside of it. And for that reason, I'm now marking it down from what I had originally intended to give this, which was roughly what I gave Horror of Glamrock, which I think you reminded me saying it was 1.8. I'm giving this 1.2. It's a piece of shit.
Sadly.
Okay. Sorry, that was a really weird review, but there you have it.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode. Bye!
Like us on Facebook.
We have saved you from listening to this episode.
Yeah.
Like us on Facebook. Go to Reddit. Go to Twitter. All right. If you're not following him on Twitter, he is @Ponkin. That's Ponkin with a P.
Yeah, that's me. And this guy, you got to follow him. He is @MariusKane. That is Kane.
That's Kane with a K.
Damn right it is. People, see you in the next audiobook review, or possibly New Who review, or possibly Classic review. I have no idea which episode we're dropping next. But seriously, please do yourselves a favor and listen to the next audiobooks before we do the next audiobook review, or before you listen to that. It's a double feature. It's Sisters of the Flame and
The Vengeance of Morbius.
The Vengeance of Morbius. Fantastic audiobook. Spoiler alert. Okay. Be rad and excellent to each other.
Bye.
Who back when?